Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
We are now at the second to last parsha of Bamidbar, but we're going to try to bring some closure to our approach on the book of Bamidbar. This week it's Parshas Matos. Sometimes it's a double parsha, Matos Maseh, but this year it's only Matos, but it's going to be our last for Bamidbar. In the course of our study this year, whose theme is the basics of Torah reality, and we've just done a nice dose of it just now in our conversation, we have been looking at ways that Torah views the world perhaps different and sometimes opposite the way that apparent, or shall we say secular reality views things. And it's been eye-opening for me, and I hope for you. In the book of Bamidbar, we have been focusing on the very, very important aspect of Torah reality, and that is the role that man plays in Torah reality. We are anything but passive participants in the world. In fact, after I make my main points today, I think we will see just how vital our role is in the world. But to try to bring together some of what we've learned in our study of Bamidbar, we kind of got to the point where we started just trying to grasp the idea that we, as people, have to learn how to control ourselves, because we are complex creatures. We have a body like other creatures do. We have instincts like other creatures do, and of course much more sophisticated, but we also have a mind and an intelligence that is unique to man. And if we don't empower our intelligence, then it is very difficult to command and direct the other parts of us. We always talk about in the Torah about good, having good midos, having good character traits. And within us are all kinds of midos, and both in the constructive and in the destructive sense. So one of our main jobs in serving Hashem and emulating Hashem is to learn how to bring out our good side, our good midos. But in order to do that, we have to use our secha, we have to use our minds, and our minds have to become supreme within us. And that's a particular challenge today, because the trends of today are to minimize the mind, I believe, and certainly in out there on the street. It's not that we're not interested in knowledge, but the kind of knowledge that the world is pursuing now is very easy knowledge. It's very superficial knowledge. It's the kind of knowledge that you get information and you pass information. There's very little of delving and thinking and what you're calling philosophizing, but you know, there's not so much of that. We're encouraged to do things quickly. We're encouraged to pass information quickly and not spend a lot of time on it, be efficient. And we develop this a lot, but the thinking is under attack. Then we learned that even in the thinking process, there's various different stages. This was something that we learned from the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, you know, 200 years ago, wrote this amazing masterpiece called the Tanya, and he breaks us down, our neshamos and our everything. He breaks it down to a very molecular level, and he says there's the capacity that we have called chachma, wisdom, and then there's the capacity that we have called bina, understanding. And then there's the capacity we have called da'as, knowledge. In fact, the name Chabad is an acronym for Chachma, Bina, and Das. And Chachma is something that comes easily on your level. It'll be a flash of intellect that you might have within you, or you may observe, or let's say you hear a great lecturer. Wow, you're taken by it. You have just been exposed to some Chachma, but you haven't done much with it yourself. You haven't really digested it yourself. That requires Bina. Bina means submitting yourself to the process of understanding it, and that requires analysis and questioning and making sure you understand it. You could explain it to somebody else. That's not really required that much in our society. Sure, let's share Chachma. Let's have a Chachma experience, but is Bina required? Not so much. And then, even after you have, assuming you would have Bina, you still have to have the Das. And the Das is the taking what's in your mind, what's developed and understood, and creating an emotional attachment to it, such that you actually want to do something with that knowledge. Make it part of you, or maybe you'll decide it's not part of you and you should distance it. But assuming that it's good wisdom and that you understand it correctly, you would then have to make it yours. And you would have to look for ways to incorporate it into your being and to bring it eventually to action. So clearly, this processing of information is something that you don't get just by a mouse click. And for us to live by the Torah and for the Torah to empower us to actually work on things like midos, character development, requires a tremendous investment. But my conclusion, after all is said and done, is this is what we need to do. And this needs to be our assignment as Torah students. A, to resist the temptation of just living superficially and being satisfied with superficial passage of information. B, exposing ourselves to the right Chachma and the right sources of Chachma. C, engage in the process of Bina, of truly understanding, which I mentioned last week that the ultimate source for Bina is Talmud, Gemara. And that is the source for what Bina is and how one properly engages in it. And it's not something that's easily accessible. Well, it is and it isn't. It is because there's opportunities to study Talmud. Women don't need it because they have a natural Bina, by the way. Bina yaseira nitna l'nashim. Women were given extra understanding. But men don't get it unless they really wrap their brains around it. So that really ultimately would require something the kin of Talmud study. And then Das, which may be fostered by the study of Musar, where one studies with a quest, with a sincerity, with an open heart. And this should be our goal of Torah students. Just to say that while we visit Torah sites on the internet is good, but that doesn't guarantee all of this. Just to say I attend lectures is good. It's better than the alternative. You definitely should, but it also doesn't guarantee all of this. You can attend lectures for your whole life and not be changed. And we know this. I mean, we experience this in our lives too. So where does that lead us, and what should we do for today? So my humble attempt is to try to engage in this process with you. Take something from the Parsha. I sat down with the Parsha and I opened it up and I said, what's something in here that I've seen many times and I know it on the top of my head, but just on a superficial level? Let's try to have some more Bina. And then let's try to possibly create some Das out of that. And I'm going to try one example with you. And this is maybe what we can walk away with after our unit on Bamidbar. The Chachma that I chose, it's God's Chachma, so I know it's wisdom, is what the Parsha says at the beginning. Moshe spoke to the heads of the tribes of the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing that Hashem has commanded." This is Parshas Matos, page 901. Ish ki dor neder l'Hashem, o hishava shavua, lesar isar al nafsho, lo yachel dvaro, k'chol hayotze mipiv ya'aseh. If a man takes a vow to Hashem, or swears an oath, to establish a prohibition upon himself, he shall not desecrate his word. According to whatever comes from his mouth, shall he do. The term is neder, or shavua, vow or oath. Usually when we hear that term, it's something that we said we would do. I said I would give tzedakah. This is a kind of a neder, true. But the what's being described here is a neder of a prohibition. Let's see if Art Scroll gives us a synopsis. Yeah, it must be understood that there's no English equivalent for the word neder. For lack of anything closer, it is commonly translated as vow, a word that means a pledge to do something. A simple pledge, however, though a Jew must keep his word, is not the subject of this passage. The neder of the Torah's parlance is as follows. There are two categories of neder. A, one can prohibit to himself something that the Torah permits. By saying, for example, "The produce of such and such a country is forbidden to me for 30 days. A person creates a prohibition upon himself. It's only binding for himself. But the Torah says if a person utters such a statement, and he specifies some objects, and he says they are prohibited, then they are prohibited. Lo yachel dvaro, he shall not desecrate his word, according to whatever comes from his mouth shall he do." Let's say I'm having a hard time with my chocolate addiction. And so I say, for the next year, chocolate is prohibited to me. And I use the word neder. Well, guess what? I'm not allowed to eat chocolate. By Torah law. Even though it has an OU on it. Even if it's Chalav Yisrael. So, I've heard this before. You know, you make a neder. So, I sat down and I said, let me think about this a little bit more than I have in the past. And this is, I'm going to just tell you the steps of my thought. First question is, why? Why should something that I, a foolish human being, decided to open my big mouth and say something ridiculous like that, why should it be binding? Why should Hashem, God, in His Torah say, you said it? That's the word. That's it. You have just created a new prohibition, the 614th commandment for you. If you eat chocolate, I regard it as though you have eaten not treif, because treif is not a something that man creates. Let's take something that does exist. When a person brings an offering of sacrificial kind, he is not allowed to eat that meat except under certain conditions. He may have to be a Kohen, he may have to be pure, it may have to be in the temple environs, something like that. Well, you have just created the same status of food on all chocolate in the world, because you said it. And my question is, why just because I said it, does it mean that it has to be? I'm not God. So the typical answer, well, God doesn't want you to take words lightly. He wants you to take your word seriously and live with it. You know, almost like a penalty. Sorry, I know you didn't mean it, but you said it, now you gotta live, now you gotta eat your words wouldn't be a good analogy, but no, it's not just a penalty. The Torah says when a man makes a vow, his words are binding. Almost as if God says a commandment and that's binding, when a person says a word, that's binding. That is reality. That is absolute reality, just like it's clear as day outside. Well, if that's what the Torah is saying, then the Torah is saying something incredible about me and about you and about all of men. And it's, by the way, it's not only a man, it's also a woman. Now, there are mechanisms for annulment. There are mechanisms for annulment. Do you have something that's burning?
I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but didn't you say it started out, it said when a man makes a vow to Hashem, then that is, or am I reading
the ring? No, it's right, but that doesn't make a difference. The definition is still as we have said it. It's still referring to a personal prohibition that he created. So there is a way of annulment, but it's a real process. It's a procedure. You can't just say, "Oh, just kidding," you know, none of that. So I understand. Yes, just clarifying on this point. Yes.
The clarification when you said neder, an expression bli.
Yeah. So when you're saying bli neder, what you're saying is I am not uttering a vow. Usually people say that when they're talking about the other kind of vow that he said we're not dealing with, which is I'm going to do something. But technically that could get you out of making a neder. We're just talking about the pure concept of neder, which means that a person's words create a new reality of prohibition. And this is what I hear from this. What I hear from this is God is saying to me and to you, you're not just little old people. In this world here, it's Hashem and it's man. And I've created the world, I've given you the Torah, but now I'm stepping back and you're running the world. You're running the world. What happens in the world is up to you. I gave you the commandments. I told you that if you keep the commandments, this happens. If you don't keep the commandments, that happens. I told you what the parameters are. I told you that one day this world will end, and we will all be redeemed and go somewhere else. But right now, you're in charge. You make decisions of halacha, of Jewish law. You hold courts. You answer questions. I do not answer questions. If there is a dispute between sages, I will not get involved. You will have to settle it yourselves. And you are now, you're in charge. I'm God, but you, man, are in charge. And just to show you how much you're in charge, I am giving you an extremely powerful tool called words. And I am ordaining that with your words, you wield tremendous power. One of those powers is that if you say something, it sticks. If you make a declaration, if it's a prohibition, that prohibition is as binding as if I said a prohibition. And of course, as we know, our words are extremely powerful. They can be used to give life. They can be used to defame. They can be used to destroy. They can be used to carry on our message from generation to generation, and that's how powerful our words are. But it's God's way of saying, you are in charge, and this is the power I'm giving you. You are speakers. And this is one example of the power of your words. So, applying a little bit more of Bina to this concept, instead of just taking it at superficially and say, yeah, if you make a neder, you got to keep it. Next, I'm saying, what does this mean? And on a DOS level, what does this tell me? It makes, now I can't tell you I'm going to remember this when I go home, but it makes me want to go home and actually watch what I say and watch how I talk to my wife and to my children. And if it's true about a neder, it's true about other words. And who knows what else is going on? You know, the sages teach us that if you speak lashon hara, you know, there are things going on in the upper worlds. For example, if A speaks lashon hara about B, there's a teaching. Maybe it's in the Zohar. If A speaks lashon hara about B, so A will get all of B's sins, and they'll be transferred to A. Or B will get all of A's merits. Wild things like that. All because somebody spoke. All because of words. So we can take this concept and we can really penetrate and think about it and, you know, discover more about it. But the conclusion is that we have this incredible divine power. Whoa. So that's an example. Just an example of, let's make this Torah study something which is deep. Let's wrap our minds around it. Think about the implications. Think about how this impacts us. Chachma, Bina, and Das. I think that what we need to do in general as Torah students and as people who care deeply about our future is we have to use our minds and we have to study Torah deeply. That's my point. That's the point of this class. That's my conclusion from this unit on Bamidbar and on Adam. This is, if we raise our level of consciousness, this is really going to enable us to transform ourselves, where our mind will become bigger and we'll be able to lead our midos and control our actions, our paths, our movements. That's the idea I'm trying to bring out. And I think that the way we can do that is by studying Torah with a penetrating thought and with a passion such that it really transforms us. Any comments?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear them. And if you want, I will throw out one other just observation with the Parsha and see what we can think about it. But let's hear.
Well, I thought you said the Neder was a prohibition.
Yeah.
And that maybe the thing that's bothering me right here is how do we reconcile Yiftach? You know, with the story of Yiftach. Are we all familiar?
Please just review it for us. Yeah.
Yiftach or Jephthah. He goes out to battle and he says, well, if I win this battle, whatever comes out of the door when I get back home, I will sacrifice to God. Well, who would come out but his daughter? So what does he do? Now he has to sacrifice his daughter, which he does. Now the question, of course, is what is the greatest sin? Making the neder, the commitment, or acting on it? He might have done better by take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still an unsettling kind of question.
Yeah.
Of course, you said it was a prohibition. Of course, he's not making a prohibition. He's committing, he's swearing to do some act which he had failed to think about. And you said something about there might be some sort of
annulment. Your question is classic, a classic question to be studied in the Talmud. The commentaries go to town on this question. Was his neder binding? Did he seek a court to ask him what he should do? Was it the right thing that he did to offer his daughter? This is classic. This is what you would take a nice juicy Talmud lesson and engage in this. And this would be the idea. You have a great question. You start off with a question, and then you seek to get Bina. And sometimes it's not enough just to think. What would you say? You've got to go to sources. Right. Now, I don't know off the top of my head. I remember once seeing a long article or a chapter in a scholarly book on this question.
I was wondering. I mean,
yeah?
How far do you go when you make a commitment that is unwise,
especially
if it involves someone else?
It's someone else. Can a person make a...
the court should have stepped in and said, hold on there, buddy. You're committing somebody else to something that you have no right over that person.
Right. For example, the Talmud states that a person can only offer as a sacrifice something which he owns. Well, does a person own his daughter? This is a great example of where great Bina and research is
it
required.
It pops up in Hamlet. Yeah. Exactly. Is where it comes.
That story?
In
Rigoletto.
Right.
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 Wow.
The first one who comes out
wow.
of the back cab.
That's where they got it from.
I thought he didn't know it was in the bag.
There's something to that.
In other words,
he made a vow which resulted in the death of his daughter.
The same thing in Hamlet, of course. What happens... what's the girl's name? Ophelia, mm-hmm. you know. And Hamlet says to Ophelia's father, you know, Jephthah had a daughter too.
Mm. They literally quote it.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yes.
So I kind of see this again as a metaphor. The daughter is the Jewish nation.
The daughter is what?
The daughter is the Jewish nation.
All right.
Okay. But also what I'm hearing from you is when you're talking, I get the impression that it's somewhat like an internal thing, and how sometimes we have this tendency we want to make deals with God. That what we're talking about is commitment and
mm-hmm.
vow.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, I'll do this, but like, what am I granted in return?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of contamination and stuff, I think, in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no sincerity, there's no devotion,
well, very
no
good.
Real commitment there.
Right. Again, this idea of absoluteness, you know, we don't live in a world of we, you know, modern man does not live in a world of absoluteness. You can say whatever you want and then you don't have to act on it. You know, very little that's absolute. Yes.
Rabbi, I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
First one, the notions of Chochma, Bina, and Das are all about how we process
mm-hmm.
ideas
mm-hmm.
mentally.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say anything about action.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been taught that Judaism is religion-based principally on action.
Certainly.
So where does the action portion come in on this?
It's a little bit unfair that I went through this kind of quick overview. We spent several weeks, and I'm not sure when the last time you heard me. We spent several weeks describing man from the bottom up, starting with the body, the goof, and then moving up to the nefesh, which includes instincts and emotions, and then moving up to seichel, to the mind. We discovered that in the world that we live in, we're very aware of our bodies and our emotions and our instincts. But then we came to that point that our mind is underused. We then spent a class figuring out this lesson about the Chachma, the Bina, and the Das, with the understanding that once one has Das, it brings the wisdom from the mind back into the emotions, which then affects the body. And that it would be short-sighted to say that all we have to worry about is our actions, because when there's no mind, there's no control over the actions. And that the right way, the Torah way, is to go from the Chachma to the Bina to the Das to the actions. That was the kind of the context.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Fisher.
Was Das though action when you were internalizing it?
It's the beginning of action. It's going to lead, once it gets into the emotions. See, we're looking at it as like an up-down thing. You know, like the way a person stands on their feet, you know, the lower part of the body is more physical, and then you travel up, you get to the heart, and then you get to the mind. So the Chachma Bina Vedas is the process of going from the top down. The implication is that we'll go into the actions too. If you're not emotional about it, you're not going to do it. And if you don't understand it, you're not going to get emotional. So... It is the process. But let me throw out something just that I just picked out and said another thing to ponder about. In chapter 31, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'eis hamid yanim achar te'asef el amecha. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, take vengeance for the children of Israel against the Midianites. Afterwards you will be gathered unto your people. Moshe, says God, The Midianites got us into a lot of trouble. They seduced our men. They dragged them into immorality, into idolatry. And quite frankly, I want to get back at them. And I want you to wage a war of vengeance. This is not a war of self-defense. This is not a war of conquering land. I want you to wage a war of vengeance. And then you will pass on. This is your last assignment before you leave this world. And I've read this also many times. But do I really understand it? Doesn't it say in the Torah, Lo tikom v'lo titor, es b'nei amecha. Do not take vengeance. Do not take revenge. Now, it does say against the people of your nation. But is this how we understand God? He takes vengeance against people because of what they did? We have to go out, and they went out with a sword, and they killed hundreds and thousands of people. I mean, and animals. How do we understand this? That's the Chachma. The Chachma is, it's true. It's written there. Where's the Bina? And if I get the Bina, maybe it's going to affect the way I feel about things. Maybe it's going to affect the way I feel about evil and about evildoers. Maybe instead of, always taking the, it's okay. You know, there were consenting adults. You know, it doesn't bother me. Maybe there's some wisdom here that can be converted into a piece of das that I could actually use. I didn't work this one out, but I would love to delve into this and discover what it's saying. Yes, Dr. Brown.
Well, that comment is, of course, very troubling. And, of course, our little relatives, the Christians, picked that up right away.
It's really?
Like, oh, yes. You know, your this God is a fuel? God of vengeance, and our God is a God of mercy.
Love.
You know, love and mercy turn the other cheek, and all you say is vengeance, vengeance, etc., etc., eye for eye, tooth for tooth. That's not what it meant, I think. Oh, I hope.
Well, the eye for the eye didn't mean that, but this
course.
Certainly did, because the Torah
isn't
reports...
Isn't Yitro? I mean, not Yitro. Yeah, Yitro is a Midianite. Yes.
Yeah, but it was limited. The instructions were... See, I don't even have all the facts at my fingertips here. It was supposed to be the women, the atah. Moses said to them, did you let every female live? He must have given him more instructions.
Well, if it is, it's in the Midrash, because I didn't see anything going back to the beginning.
So now, kill every male among the young children. Every woman fit to know a man by lying with a male, you shall kill. But all the young children among the women who have not known lying with a male, you may keep alive for yourselves. Well, we've got to understand this.
I think the argument is that you know all these other women. If you would don't kill the women, they're going to have children that are going to end up being your enemy and then go to war against you. So you
right.
I think
all right.
It's more than that. I think it's more like he's saying take vengeance for the people of Israel against the Midianites. It's not like they came up to kill us,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. It's they came. To warp us.
Okay.
Well,
lead
seduce,
us astray.
Seduce is the immediate effect.
But
she's talking about the long term effect. Yeah.
Corrupt.
Corrupt us. It's not just like a seduction and you slip into something. It's like, no, we want to change your whole way of thinking, and we want to do it through action.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the one thing that Hashem can't abide by. Come head on, try and kill people, express yourself with your ideas or whatever, but don't corrupt a person.
All right.
Because then you're affecting them from the inside out. It's like, don't give somebody their first cigarette. Because you're going to affect their insides to the point that they're going to need something or think they want something they really shouldn't have at all.
Mm-hmm.
And since they created a sickness, so to speak, you have to get the germ gone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the germ gone.
This is the first incidence of zero tolerance. Something to think about.
Another thought had to do with my had to do with Dr. Schultz's comment about thinking and doing. I often wondered about the ninth commandment. You know, you can tell people to do this, don't kill, don't murder, don't steal, don't have adultery. Can they tell you don't covet?
No, the tenth commandment?
The ninth, the tenth, with the covet, you know,
yeah.
One of those. This,
yeah.
But don't covet? What's wrong with coveting? Can't you hate people if you want to hate them? No, because that will lead to action. If you desire something little by little, it will become an act.
So just prohibit the action.
And it might be that one of those three, whether it's the Bina, the Chochmah, or the Das, that is the next step right after that, is the doing.
Yeah.
And the link between your intellect and your body action has to do with your tongue, as you were saying, with the Lashon
mm-hmm,
Hara.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, what's the divine quality that mm-hmm. humans have? Namely, mm-hmm. that they can use their speech
yeah.
to turn their soul into a physical act.
Mm.
So, for right. whatever that goes.
Okay, Wendy, and then we'll close.
Mm-hmm. Torah is the vengeance. The words in the Torah and our law, the laws that we live and every action that we take and every prayer that we make and every candle that we light and every bracha and everything, this becomes the transformation. It's the it's our internal that we become the visible, and it's that how we count. It's the counter. It's
right.
Whatever's taking place over here, this is the counter.
That's what makes this bothersome, because we're used to thinking that you don't fight fire with fire. You just do your mitzvos and let the light from the mitzvos dispel the darkness. Right? In other words, we're not aggressive. We just do our thing, and we hope that that will bring light to the world. So that's why this is so seems to be so out of character, that here we have to go, and we have to go over to people who are not living, you know, what we consider upstanding lives, and they've tried to influence us, and we are going to literally take them out. It bothers, it upsets our understanding of Torah, and when that happens, we have no choice. I mean, we could just brush it, you know, under the rug and say, well, let's skip that part. Or we could delve deeply and try to understand what are we missing. Because this is the same God that says, love your neighbor as yourself, and says, give charity to the widow and the orphan, and this is what he told Moshe. So there's something that I'm missing that I need to try to delve. Yes, Dina.
Okay, I don't have the answer, but I keep feeling that there must be some connection to the fact that right afterwards, Hashem said that Moshe was going to be returned to people.
Uh-huh. True. True. Mm-hmm. It is interesting. You know, it says that, Rashi says that the people didn't want to go to war. So the question is, why didn't they want to go? It was a commandment from God.
Because they knew that.
So
Moshe
they said, because as soon as the war is over, Moshe is going to leave us. So they had to be forced. They had to be taken to the war to go do this, because God said.
Yeah, it's interesting because there seems to be certain things that Hashem allows for. I mean, like the Egyptians were bad; they were horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
But we can take them in as converts.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the status with Midianites is, but Moab,
yeah,
we're not allowed to take
even when they convert, yes.
So there seems to be something infectious, germish, about that type of thing and this type of thing
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
he's trying to wipe mm-hmm. out.
Wasn't King David's grandmother
Moabite
from Moab?
That was what people said. They maligned him. And the masters of the oral tradition said it only says males.
That's a sneak.
No, but it's, you know what? It's a sneak, but it's true. It's the same thing I said before about elitist. It's sneaky, but it's true.
Well, the other thing is,
if God said so,
it wasn't the Midianites or the Amalekites that were the bad. It was they were doing bad things, and you should strike out against bad things, mm-hmm. about against evil.
Yeah.
You should annihilate evil, not the people who perpetrate.
But this—that's why this is so bothersome. It's so striking.
I think their essence is evil.
Yeah.
It's not that they're doing bad things. They are bad people.
They're infectious.
As opposed to they're doing bad things, you know, as you said, your child, you know. We love you, but we don't like what you did.
Right.
Okay. But there is such a thing. I mean, Charles Manson is a, or Hitler is a, you know, their essence is evil.
I have another suggestion, and I don't know if this is authoritative, but I remember such a thing. The Talmud says that if an animal is involved in worship, in idol worship, or in bestiality, the animal must be killed. Why? It's nothing that the animal did. It's the way the animal was used by a person. And the answer is, we don't want that animal around, because if we see that animal, it will conjure up the sin, and it will keep the sin, so to speak, in the air. We've got to get rid of that animal because we've got to get rid of the sin. And perhaps that was the idea here. We can't have these people around in the world, because the Jewish people have to move on. They have to put this behind them, and the air has to be cleared. We have to get rid of the toxins because it's going to affect the Jewish people. We're dragged down when there's evil in our midst. You know the phrase, Uviar tahara mikirbecha, eradicate the evil from among you. That we have to clear the air. We have to purify our world.
Sort of related, but sort of not. But when I was glancing through the paper this morning,
mm-hmm.
I saw that they have taken the bones of, who was it, Hess, some mm-hmm. assistant to,
was that person?
To Hitler, and they burned the bones and threw them out at sea because wherever he was buried was becoming
a shrine.
A shrine.
Ooh,
to the neo-Nazis.
Where was that?
Ooh.
In Germany?
This just happened in the last day or two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good thing
the neo-Nazis were going to that site.
Wow.
Good thing they put Osama bin Laden in the sea. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I love thinking with you and studying Torah with you. Yashar Koach, thank you so much.
Course.
Looking forward to getting together again on September 2nd. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.